and welcome to another edition of Turned Out a Punk Footnote. I'm one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, as always, is that good buddy of mine, that good friend of yours, that good pal of ours, Chris O'Toole. Chris, how are you doing?
Good, man. That was a hell of an intro for the whole thing.
Well, I tell you, this is like, you know, sometimes I got a lot of energy off the top of the show, but then by the end of it, there's nothing left.
Yeah, same. But you're on a roll. You're on a roll so far.
Well, thank you. Let's continue that roll as we roll on into our weeks. How was your week, buddy?
Good, man. I cannot complain. It's same old, same old. Nothing out of the ordinary, which is a good thing.
Well, you're gearing up for a big tour.
Well, not a tour.
Promote the tour. Like, you know, friend, it's a someone that needs to come on the show as a guest, yes. But also yes. a good friend of both of ours, someone who we are huge fans of in these parts. So definitely someone that you should promote the tour of.
Yes, it's Ancient Shapes is the band, but the artist primarily is Daniel Romano.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Attack in Black fame, pardon me, way back when. But in recent years, Dan Romano solo. But Ancient Shapes is kind of more privy to what this show is all about, I would say.
I think all the way through, like that's, you know, Attack in Black certainly too, like way back when.
Yeah.
He comes from punk rock.
Yes, fully. Absolutely. But anyway, Ancient Shapes is a pretty exciting thing he's done in the last year or two. And there's a band camp, if you want to check it out, at youvechangedrecords.bandcamp.com. And within there, that's the label that he runs, so to speak. And you can find the Ancient Shapes first LP on there to listen to, which I highly recommend. It's kind of really great sort of power pop, however you want to categorize stuff like that.
I remember the first time I ever hung out with Dan and the rest of Attack in Black, but very clear, vivid memory of that night in St. Catharines. Were you there that night too at Joel's?
I don't think you were.
I think I was hanging out with you earlier because that's why I was there. And then I think you left, and I think I ended up rolling back to Toronto with them.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean... It's very like when we recount these tales, it's hard to remember who was around.
Really minute details in our lives.
Yeah, but it's just like, I don't know, like I was around everybody, so I don't know if it was like, I can't remember when you first met them, but I could have been there, maybe not.
I remember being the only straight edge one because there was some cannabis being smoked and it was definitely, you know, at a time when I was not a fan.
Well, then I definitely wasn't there because I don't remember.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think if you had been there, I would have had, you know, a straight edge kind of like brotherhood.
Yeah.
You know, we would have sat in the corner and just kind of like quietly sung Judge lyrics to each other and like in Floor Punch lyrics.
Yes, absolutely. As a quick pause on the tale, I didn't screw up, but that will work what I mentioned before. But Ancient Shapes also has its own band camp. So it's ancientshapes.bandcamp.com, and it's all on there. Check it out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. And go out and meet Chris on tour, because you can't follow him on social media, so you can follow him IRL.
Yeah, sure. If you want.
Go up and bring your Keep It Up records, your Urban Blight records, get something signed. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, I don't think I'll have too much of that happening.
There's a protocol when they meet you, like to take a page from Disco Inferno's book and the Keep It 100 podcast over there with my friend Conan. You know, there's a protocol when people meet you, though. They have to, you know, give you a $20 handshake to get that Urban Blight or Keep It Up record autographed. That's understood. Really? I think that's understood. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that will never happen. Anyway,
it's got to happen, okay? So if you want to get those records signed, and you do, because he doesn't sign a lot. He's not out there signing all the time. Give him the $20 handshake.
This is not required. The reality is that it would take a bizarro you in some distant foreign land to be excited about these other minute things. And that person would have to meet me and be excited, and that would be the only way this would happen.
I like to think out there listening right now, Chris, there's a legion of alternate reality versions of me just nerding out, looking at the cogs, you know.
Oh, I'm sure there are. I'm just not sure they have too much of my things at their the height of their aspirations, so to speak.
There are definitely keep it up items that I wish I had right now. and do not have. And it's amazing how that's how the collectible, the next era, is born, right? Like, it's not the records necessarily that, like, everyone's buying and everyone's keeping. It's the records you can't buy and you can't find, you know, like that elusive trunk 7-inch, Chris.
You still don't have that, eh? That's
funny. No. It haunts my dreams.
I have faith that you'll get it eventually. But yeah, I don't. You're right. Like, it is bizarre. There's a bizarre era now where I'm with you, where there are necessarily not really like rare or even hitter records, but there are records that are rare in the sense that they just don't show up. It's not that if you found them, they'd be a dollar, probably, if that. But yeah.
Yeah, no, those are legit rare records to me. Like, those are the records that, you know, it's not going to be easy to find. You know, and there's definitely, you know, keep it up variations on the 7-inch that, you know, it's not going to be easy to find.
Yeah, I suppose I would. I don't know how to comment on this. Sure.
Well, there we go. You can just leave it there, Chris. Just let it hang. Let it breathe. Still need the Urban Blight 7-inch on red. Let that sink in for a second.
Oh, the sector. Yeah. I don't have extras of that.
Nope.
But,
nor does my friend Ellis, which brings me to the next point that I want to discuss.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Static Shock Records the other day posted a brand new song featuring a very good friend of mine named, Briny, who, played in the incredible Good Throb.
Yeah.
Also former guest of the show. Listen to her episode. Yeah. It's incredible. She's awesome. Have you heard that song, Chris?
I have not heard the song, but the song, I saw this, and is it not called Raise Your Voice, Joyce, or is it the comp?
That's the name of a compilation that this song appears on.
Yes. Now,
my good friend and host of, with myself, of the right now dormant, but will return one day, Clobber in Time podcast, Tom, reached out to me and said, "Is this you?" And I said, "Is what me?" And he sent me a link to the comp. He's like, "Is this you guys?" And I said to him, "What I'm going to tell you right now, Chris."
Yes.
I have no idea.
Well, it's very funny that you bring this up because we didn't talk about this before going live here.
No.
By the way, the episode that you're referring to with Briny as well is episode 30 for the people that are keeping track of the regular Turn of the Punk podcast. Check it out. I did the same thing. I saw it come up and I thought, is this another like Davidstown scenario? Like, what is this? And then I couldn't really decipher anything. And I just assumed it was a weird coincidence.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a weird coincidence. I don't know. it's very, very weird.
I just didn't know if there was some, like, you know, because there's a lot of like whatever you want to say, like, you guys have done a good job with sort of the Davidstown's a great example. Like, if anyone saw that at face value, they might not realize it's you are all behind all of it. You there, Dane?
Yeah, can you hear me? Sorry, you cut out for a second, Chris.
Yeah, I just cut out for a sec. I'm good now.
No, sure, you're saying. People didn't realize. Saying,
the Davidstown comp could be misunderstood as like someone not realizing that's like all you guys.
Yeah, no, that was like my initiative in fucked up, right? Like, I will take, yes, that was like, you know, I came with this sort of like idea, and then, you know, then they did it, and it turned out really cool. This time, I have no clue. It would be an amazing coincidence if it is a coincidence. I don't know. I have no idea. I have not talked to anyone in the band about it whatsoever.
Yeah.
I think that song's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But I am completely in the dark when it comes to
it. It is funny, and there's enough people, like, you know, as we know, there is a certain aquatic band member that is living that part of the world, which makes me wonder if there's something going on there. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know. The song is fucking awesome, and I'm stoked for the comp. The other singers that were mentioned as being involved, the other people that mentioned that were being involved, or the, so I should say musicians from the other bands that were mentioned that are being involved, are all incredible bands. So, yeah, I'm excited to hear this thing.
Yeah, the just as a point of reference really quick, it's on Static Shock Records, and it's called Raise Your Voice, Joyce, Contemporary Shouts from Contemporary Voices. And it's obviously a various compilation. But, yeah, I don't know. It says it was released in – oh, it is releasing in October. I see. So it's not out yet.
No.
It's coming out.
It's coming out. Yeah, no, it's not out yet. I haven't seen a test press, so I don't know if it's ours at all. But I'm excited, you know. I'm excited about that. I'm excited for the new record, too. The new record is, as I keep saying, you know, very different. And, you know, my role in the band now is kind of different, too. So I feel just as much along for the ride as everyone else now.
Which is a bizarre statement coming from someone in the group. But, yes, I know. I know what you're saying.
I was a lot more of an insider on previous projects. Now I feel like, you know, but kind of by my own, you know, choosing, I guess, ultimately. But, you know, now I'm just like, okay, what's next? You know, sure, maybe we're involved in this thing. Who knows? I don't know. Cool. Who's on the record? Don't know. I know I sing a couple songs. I recognize some other voices, so I can say.
I know someone else who's sung on it. That's not me.
But I know someone else who sung on it too, that I think you would know too.
Yeah.
There are some voices that I have no idea who they are. They're great. No, I'm not dissing them. I'm not saying it should be me instead. It all works, but it's like, I would be lying if I said that, like, I was like in the studio, you know, Rick Jamesing it for Eddie Murphy style.
Yeah.
That's what I still picture like a studio session being like, but it's never like that.
No, not these days anyway, it doesn't seem.
Well, I don't know ever there's like a producer just like listening in the booth and they get so inspired they just like get the, like, you know, they're listening in like the, I guess, the studio room, the room of the desk. Yeah. You can tell
control room, yeah.
There you go. You can tell how much I know about the actual process of being in a band. And they go into the live room and they just like start, you know, wiling out because they get so inspired by the music.
Yeah.
Maybe that happened in the 70s.
Yeah, I think a lot of things happened in the 70s that don't happen anymore.
No. I've been in some pretty smoked out studio sessions, but yeah, that's never happened.
Yeah, I don't, it's a different, it's a whole different thing now.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to comment on that.
Just leave it, buddy. Let's move on. Any other music news that we should get to?
I don't believe so, since we recorded the last one of these pretty close together. I don't think, I'm trying to scrape my, that what we just mentioned was one of the things that did pique my interest, but we already covered that. Yeah, I can't remember. Oh, I forgot to shout out. There's a new Waste Management record out on Painkiller.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great, and they've been around for a while, and they're great folks. And they're a raging, no-joke hardcore band that's always been great. So check that out. I cannot remember what it's called. It's called Tried and True. It's on the Formidable Painkiller Records. Check it out.
All right, so pick up that record. And I guess, should we get into the... in today's episode
type thing. Yeah, man, we can roll on it.
We're not going to do the mailbag because we're going to work on a mailbag episode coming up. Maybe get the whole team together for that. But that will be in the near future. So we're just going to jump right into today's episode talking to, yes, I stand by this, one of the greatest front people of all time, Eric Davison of the New Bomb Turks. Chris, are you a fan of the New Bomb Turks?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think you already knew that, but yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, big fan of the New Bomb Turks. But actually, to be fair, I was looking at the discography just now. I don't really know the last two or three records. I know the kind of those first three. But yeah, great, great band. I never, ever got to see them. Even because didn't they recently do reunions as well, I believe?
They did a couple reunion shows, but I don't think they made it up here.
I never did. Like, again, it's another one of those. I'm going through this a lot lately where there's a lot of bands that at certain points I probably had an opportunity to see or more, or I did, and I just for whatever reason ignored it or whatever. And they're a group where by the time I would have been able to catch them, which I imagine would have been around like whatever, late 90s,
mm-hmm.
I would have been like not. And not to say the records, especially if I listen to them all again now, even those latter ones, I'm sure I would really, really enjoy them. But at the time, I remember thinking like I really liked that first record a lot and everything just sort of didn't catch me as much. So I wasn't as keen for whatever reason. So, yeah, essentially, basically, I missed the opportunity. I was thinking about this recently because I recently went on a little, for whatever reason, deep dive on not deep dive, but just started listening to a bunch of John Spencer stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of stuff is all of that era for me. So I just thought, man, I never saw any of these bands, which is foolish, massively foolish. But yeah, New Bomb Turks, who I never saw, but yeah, amazing, amazing group.
Yeah, like I've always felt the New Bomb Turks like are like, you know, an unheralded kind of great hardcore band at a time when like hardcore was so far removed from punk rock for the most part. Yeah. That it almost had to become its own thing completely. And I don't mean this in a completely negative way either. Like it was kind of its own awesome thing in its own right, but there was very little connection between what was happening in like 90s, like capital H hardcore of all manners and what the New Bomb Turks were playing. But I think the New Bomb Turks ultimately were heralding back to like, you know, the origins of hardcore, which is hardcore punk rock. And yeah, they are awesome. That record, Destroy, Oh Boy, is still, to me, one of the great, I would say, top two or three hardcore records of the 90s for me. And I think it's on Tattooed Apathetic Boys. The mosh part is fucking incredible. Like, the breakdown part is fucking wicked.
Yeah, and that's a great song title, too. But,
yeah.
I will maintain, just to have his public record here, that statement that you just made about it being the top, you know, I've heard you say different variations, but it's either best or, you know, whatever, one of the best 90s records. That's something that I've heard you saying since I first met you, really. Like, he's not that I expect that anyone would think that, but it's, you're not putting it on just because this was the interview. This is definitely something that has been talked about at length and been a professed opinion for some time.
Oh yeah. Like that was like when I, you know, in my in my younger, more verbose kind of punishing people kind of days, I straight up went up to Jim from New Bomb Turks when he came to see Fucked Up play in Paris and was like, I think he actually comes up in the interview even. And I was like, Destroy, Oh Boy is one of the top hardcore records of all time. Like, I stand by that. I think that record's fucking incredible. You know, there's a couple records from that period that I think don't really get the credit they deserve for being, like, great hardcore records. Like, and I obviously love other stuff from that era, too. But,
yeah,
you know, there was a period in the 90s, like, 93 in particular, where, you know, I don't know. I think that's got to be the best record that came out that year. I'm trying to think what else came out in 93.
It's hard to, I can't remember. I'm bad with like specific years and a lot of things. I just know that certain like windows of 90s or 90s in general, but
well, there's apparently 154,939 records that came out that year according to the resource that I've just clicked on. Maybe I'm going to give it to the Both Sides of the Story Phil Collins record.
Yeah, no, thank you. Not with you there.
I'm not standing by that.
No, no, nor should anybody.
Is it better than the Restrained 7-inch, which came out that year, the pre-Coalesce Militant Straight Edge kind of mosh band?
Yes.
Okay.
I have no issue with that, though, to be fair. I have not listened to that record that I know of.
The Restrained record?
Yeah, I've never listened to it, but I don't mind the, was it Coalesce? You said it's Coalesce? Pre-Coalesce?
Coalesce, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind that band. Like, they're all right, so I can probably hang with it.
I think it's the singer. It might be someone else, but on the cover of the 7-inch, it's got a dude who's X'd up, reaching into his pants, pulling out a gun, hoods up, rolling up on, I guess, just a bunch of dudes standing in an alley. Maybe it's a gang. Maybe it's drug dealers. Who knows? I'm not saying anything. They're in the distance. You can't really see what they're doing. But he's about to hand out, you know, some justice.
Wow. Yeah, the...
I still think Destroyer Boy is better, and the cover art's better on Destroyer Boy.
Definitely, yes, without question. But I will say, I do think, and I have always aspired, especially in more recent years, to... Everything you just kind of described is very, very, that very, very, like, 90s centric... I don't even know what you want to call it, but you know, whatever, like that kind of hardline, more or less, scene. I've always aspired to make that like a type of Killed by Death subgenre.
Yeah.
And mine all that stuff. Specifically, I remember before, like we've discussed it on the. I cannot remember. His
you
name,
could call it Killed by. You could call it KBD too. It could be like Killed by Drop D Tuning.
yeah, that's the only part about it is exactly it's often like proto nu metal or whatever, and that's the thing about it that's unfortunate.
Yeah. There's
too many like 7-string guitars and bad tuning, and it's highly idealistic and misguided and all that, and it's bad, terrible fashion. But
it was like raver pants,
yeah,
Krishna beads, like sweater vests. Yeah. Like headbands, hair combed straight down, like it. Yeah, that fashion has not aged well. Like
no,
it really.
Yeah, but having said that, there is something weirdly like intriguing to me about it.
Yeah, same.
And I legitimately like, even if people now kind of bag on some of that stuff, by no means am I like the greatest fan of it sonically. A lot of it, but I do think there's something to be like. Made of like collecting, you know, all of those records, at least the aesthetic of them at least, and all that, and like appreciating it in some bizarre way. So yeah, so basically I'm just saying I won't crap on it, although of course New Bomb Turks absolutely obliterates all that stuff, no question.
Yeah, it's you know, and they were a band that never let you down. Like, not every record sounds the exact same, but at the same time, like, they never, you know, put out a rap metal record, or, you know,
yeah.
And I think that's the thing that comes across, is like, they were like students of music.
Yes. The interview presents that very well, because I think, you and him talking is a feat for most people. 'Cause I was just trying to think, like, I don't know what there's left to uncover after you two have discussed things. Like, it's, you've pretty much turned over every stone. And I can imagine you two hanging out in real life, if you ever have, how crazy that would be, in a good way. But I would just listen. There'd be no point in speaking for me. But yeah, I do think you're correct. The students of music thing is an interesting point. That was one of the things that really I liked about the interview, which was incredibly obvious, of course, when you two were discussing it, but because you were asking him specifically about how their choice of covers and things of that nature came about, and how they found out about all that stuff. And specifically, I believe the criteria was, were you guys like a record collector band? You said something along mm-hmm. those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And that led me to think of groups, if you notice anyway, it tends to be either groups or at least some individual within a band that tends to be a big record person, like a record hound in a sort of a, you know, more quote unquote like esoteric way, dare I say, their groups tend to be very good. And it, you can break it down. Like, you think of like classic ones like Poison Idea is like undeniable, same kind of thing. They're a great group. Back to your aforementioned band, I think that's the same thing. And I think when you first encounter these groups, especially early on, you realize like it's intimidating when you think of the knowledge that is contained within the people who are responsible for making the music. And I think it's perfectly stated. No, go on.
No, I was going to say, like, I think that's 100%. Like, I think that's why I love, you know, music made by students of this music, you know, like, I think it's such a post modern genre that, like, you know, it's almost like you need to be a student of it to kind of like fully grasp it, you know, like you need to understand who the feeders were and where their place in punk history is and like who Why Die was and why they're hugely important. And, you know, like you need to understand like the minutia to really get what's going on in it. And maybe it's the same with every other music genre. And I just don't understand other music genres as much, but nah, it's only punk.
I know. I don't think it's only punk. I think rap is very good when the people are in tune, specifically on the DJ end of it. But I shouldn't say the MC end of it too. But regardless, yeah, I think that's an apt point. I think also within like punk, anyway, from my experience, I just feel like after a while, especially of a certain age at a certain point, I think you get like people kind of get bored with sort of the token homages. So then it becomes almost like the quest to like keep digging deeper and deeper, and the groups that tend to be like of more interest to people, when you think of the waves of the way stylistically things go, it tends to be certain things popping at different times. You know what I mean? Like that, you know, and I think that's like a kind of student of music vibe in a way, because I think like, you know, I don't know if, and these groups, I don't know if the groups that are popping at various times in the history of punk hardcore would have been as big in other eras because of it being the sort of the crest of the wave when it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like a Mental Drop right now. Mental were an amazing live band, arguably the best live band of the era, in my opinion. But I don't know if Mental would have hit as hard sonically right now as they did when they came out, as an example.
Yeah, I think it's like culture's cumulative, right? Like you can't, and you know, like the sounds of before, like, you know, you see it a lot in wrestling, like where people are like, oh, wrestling now is like so much faster and like crazier and there's so many more moves. And it's like, well, that's just everything evolves, right? And like you can't do what the generation before you did because they've done it. You know, and I think that's the thing with punk rock. Like, it can become like about trying to recreate the thing that came before it, but the bands that actually kind of move and shift the needle try something different. And like, yeah, like would it hit as hard if they were to drop today? You know, like after they've already kind of shifted everything.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it as like throwing shade at that now or even that style. No. I just think like it seems to be that the way things moved exactly, like, and they're particularly, you know, that's a particularly polarizing example because I feel like they changed things. So yes, now that it's changed where, you know, it's kind of moving on from there rather than backward or what have you. But as cyclical as things are, I truly believe as well. But I don't know, just to my
that point. That live show would still be incredible. Like Greg Mental was still like the, top five front people of certainly of that era.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But, it's just an easy example to bring up. I could have brought up, you know, like a handful of other groups too, but just to illustrate that, you know, I don't see the biggest groups or the most representative or most, you know, talked about groups of this era being that style at the moment is what I'm trying to say. And that to me is indicative of the way things go, where people sort of tire of certain little things like sonically and they gravitate toward others. Like right now, obviously it's more of a, like sort of a back to sort of punk or almost like D beat worship era again. And then now who knows where it'll go after that. But, even that might be kind of over. I'm not quite up on it So that might even be a little past, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it keeps getting more and more fragmented too, right? Like there's so many micro scenes and, you know, there's obviously like unifying stuff that happens, but, you know, what was the last band that kind of did that? Gloss? I guess Turnstile too.
Yeah, both of those are examples of, I think, I'm trying to think of one I always... those two are definitely the very big examples of the last few years that like have really kind of well those
I Crime Watch too actually you know people are definitely like Crime Watch is something that people are talking about and it seems like all over hardcore now and punk
I don't know like we're close to it because even I think bands like shit
you're right shit definitely
I feel like because we're close to it regionally, I feel like maybe it seems, but I think I underestimate, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, I noticed that they were, like, headlining a tour out west, and it's like, oh, shit, yeah, they're a headlining band. It's like, oh, yeah, they've been around for almost, like, what, close to, like, 10 years at this point? Like, 6 years at least, 7 years.
Yeah, it's been a good while. But I know I first noticed it when, if you there's the... For people that use social media, I'm sure you'll be very familiar with this, but there's the dude from Wolf Eyes that has his memes.
Yeah.
And there was recently a meme, because there's the meme about chain punk, egg punk. I don't even know what the hell any of that means. But regardless, there was like a funny meme that he put up, and they're actually on it.
Oh, so really?
That if there's any, like, if there's any, you know, if you're ever anointed, it's like, yeah, you've made it when you're actually in. You know, you're in the conversation for what is now, you know, happening in this subgenre, even if I don't understand what those tags mean to this day.
Yeah.
No, actually, speaking of which, if anyone wants to educate me or us, feel free to write in turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com if anyone wants to have that discussion.
I would say, you know, let's learn about this stuff. Yeah. Send it in.
Yeah.
You know, I think I noticed that there was like something that had happened. We played with Kulo one time at a show, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is the new wave. And now I'm like, oh wow, that was like 8 years ago now or something.
I remember playing with them, close 8 years or so, I would think.
Okay. Yeah. It's wild how, like, you know, even in hardcore, time moves.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It felt like in the 90s it moved so slowly.
I think we're digressing from the point, though. I think it's a good digression, but what I was trying to illustrate is I think bands that are fans first, quote-unquote, I think are tend to be the greater groups, I would argue. And I think New Bomb Church, back to that, exactly, are great. I think, you know, the group you're involved with, same deal. I think most... of the really important groups of the last, or period, like especially within this genre or subgenre or whatever you want to say, tend to be students. Mm-hmm. And if anything, actually, I think their reinterpretations of what they know or what nods or what homages they can put in without it being too on the nose are what makes it very interesting, at least for me as a listener.
100%. And like, I think that bears out, you know, on that much talked about DC trip that you and I made. Yeah. And just how, like, the level of nerdiness that we encountered that was existing there, even back then, you know, like just the level of kind of like digging that those guys were doing in that scene. And of course, I also mean, you know, the Bad Brains as well, like kind of leading the charge on a lot of that stuff too, it seems. So yeah, you're right. Nerds make the best music.
Yeah, I believe so.
Devo.
I genuinely do. True. Excellent point.
I would also like to do a deep dive on the New Bomb Turks discography, because I think they have, you know, one of, you know, the coolest runs of labels that they've done records with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're a quintessential. I don't know if they I tend to have my... I believe they check every category, which I feel that quintessential 90s bands need to check. Actually, you know what? They might not. They're missing one, at least, I think.
Well, they don't have a Slap Ham record, so...
Well, that would be on my... I like that. I like that being included. That'd be amazing. But they don't have a Sub Pop record.
No, they don't have a Sub Pop record.
I thought for sure that
But they do have a fat single, which I believe counts for double the points.
What's even funnier is they have an Earache record from 95.
I know. A Split with Entombed. What a killer record.
Yeah. What else here? But they mine tend to include, of course, somewhere along the line, Sympathy Has to Be on It, which of course they have. And I recently passed up the single just because I just didn't have the space or money at the time. Not that it's expensive. The Trying to Get By single.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're touching on most of the ones. Well, the two biggies for me, like obviously Crypt and then Sympathy, are my sort of little, like you've kind of been anointed when you hit those. But dude,
they have a record on Fat.
Yes, and Earache. Yeah. And Epitaph.
And they had a lot of records on Epitaph.
Yes.
Including, like, this is the best thing that they had in the Epitaph release department. The Vans Warped Tour promo tape featuring New Bomb Turks and the Humpers. Warped Tunes Volume 3 is the compilation. Imagine, like, you know, you're some kid. That actually probably turned on a lot of kids to some good music, actually, come to think of it.
I remember this tape now that I see that. That's funny that you mentioned that.
I would love to get a copy of this.
Seeing the art of this. I feel like that would have just been a Warped Tour, but I think we got promos of this at a record store I worked at the time.
Well, I could imagine they would have made, like, you know, quantity of this and sent it around.
Yeah.
But this is something that's legit rare, right? Like, one person has it on Discogs, one person wants it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not, you know, never been sold. It's like, that's something that I'm sure no one held on to.
Yeah. Two little anecdotes, or at least one anecdote, is there was a local college radio station or university in our neck of the woods, but where someone I knew hosted a radio show called Dragstrip Riot, which, of course, is based on the song by the New Bomb Turks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm intimately familiar with the Turks from that, and this would have been like between 97 and 99-ish, I would say. But he was way into this stuff, you know, in that you know, sort of that original era. What was the other one? I had another little anecdote that slipped my mind. Anyway, I can't remember.
No problem. I'm sure it'll come back to you, buddy.
Yeah.
We got more to dive into. Another thing I wanted to talk about today. Well, actually, let's go more into this discography, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Data Panic Records. I don't know if we've ever talked about this label on the show, but this might be one of the cooler regional labels of all time.
From Columbus, okay. I don't remember us going down this one. We'll see.
Pull it up, buddy.
I am. I'm there. What are we doing here?
We're looking
where at. Where are you going? Where are you taking me?
I'm looking at this thing. It's got the very poorly named Thomas Jefferson Slave Apartments Records, which are musically very good. Once again, not the best name. Boys from Nowhere Records, which are fantastic. Girly Machine, which is amazing. Gaunt, New Bomb Turks, of course. Also has Greenhorn Records, which are great. You know, it's a cool label, like a label that, you know, it's hard to get all this stuff. Like, some of this stuff's like really, really difficult to track down. And
there's new, like, what am I seeing here? Is this like they're releasing stuff? Like, there's stuff up to 2015, it's saying.
Yeah, I guess it came back and did stuff.
Weird. Okay. But the original run ended in, looks like, around 97, I guess.
All these records are super affordable. I thought they were more expensive, but you can kind of get them all looking like pretty, you know, pretty affordable.
What actually really needs to happen is that you need to make the next whatever kind of coffee table book that highlights, like, you know, that's a mix between like Flex and like the Touch and Go book and like Radio Silence or something. I'm probably forgetting one or two, but it's of these labels.
Yeah, it'd be cool to do one books about 90s labels, 97-ish labels.
Yeah.
Off the Disc Records, that's another one that
Yeah.
You know, stands out as being one of the coolest labels. But these, I think this label is fantastic. I think the aesthetic of it's like really cool, but also they put out, you know, like some really neat bands and some, once again, really kind of all over the map sounding bands.
Yeah, the only thing, like, I haven't heard the majority of these records. To look at them, I've seen a couple, like, I've definitely passed over some of these, I'm sure. Obviously, I know the new Bomb Turks, I know Gaunt a little bit, but is this all Columbus regional?
I think so. I think it's, I'm not 100% on that, but okay. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because I'm just trying to think, like, every time I see things like this, I'm thinking, like, is that why? Because this is all, like, a regional, like, picture of that's where these bands were from, or they just happened to release whatever.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most of these bands were Columbus area.
Seems like it, yeah. Even the newer one they released, which is that Nervosis record, or whatever, cassette, that band, they're also from Columbus, apparently. So it would make sense.
Yeah, they still, like, once again, like, it's cool that it's still going.
Yeah, it's wild. I always find that to be the most, like, crazy thing. Because there was another label we were looking at recently. Wasn't it the one that, on the Pajot episode or whatever, we brought up, what was that
label? Oh, yeah, like the Self-Destruct Records.
Yeah, and they had, like, it was the same thing. They basically took, like, a hiatus of, like, whatever, like a decade or more. And then they released a couple things.
So basically, it's not too late for our labels, Chris.
True. It's just a matter of money.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not for lack of want. It's just money.
Both you and I have put out records.
Yes, this is true. What I find is you reach an age, and everyone who collects records understands this, but this was my crossroads, was I thought about it, and I thought, well, I could do this, or I could buy, you know, United Blood. So, like, what do I really want to do more, right? And then you can insert whatever record into United Blood or that you want, any record, and you just think, like, just as long as it's expensive enough, and you think, well, would I rather that, or would I rather, you know, contribute to culture? And then you see how much you care. that's the formula.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It really is the ultimate test, when it's like, do I want to advance culture, or do I want to advance my record collection?
Yes. So you put it more aptly than I did. Yes, that's exactly.
Yeah, so I've made those choices myself. All right. This is such a downer topic. Well, let's revive our labels, and then we can, you know, we'll move on from there. What did you want to get into, Chris? I'm sorry, I've taken all the points so far.
Well, one thing real quick to jump back to, or sort of jump back to now, because we didn't really dissect it majorly, but the New Bomb Turks discography, the one thing I wanted to bring up was, you brought up in the interview the choice of covers, which I've always thought was interesting. But on Destroy Oh Boy, I've always thought it's crazy that they covered Wire of all the bands. And that song, like Mr. Suit, is such a strange, like, it's a good choice. And I mean, in 93, I would imagine that would have been like a pretty, like, out there. It's not that, of course, obviously other groups like Minor Threat covered Wire, but their version is very interesting too. It's not bad at all. It's just like, it's much different than you would expect someone to cover Wire. Actually, it's funny. Even the Minor Threat version is a bizarre take on Wire, if you think.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, no one really covers Wire the way Wire sounds.
That's true. Why is that? That's a bizarre. I never thought about that till just this moment.
Yeah, Wire, and also, why were they the band that everyone wanted to cover? Like, obviously, I guess Minor Threat led the charge. There's also, like, definitely a recording of SOA doing that song, too. I think there's a couple other bands doing that song, right? From DC?
Doing Stepping Stone or 1-2-XU?
Yeah.
I've never heard, well, that I'm aware of, I've never heard anybody else but the Minor Threat version, but it could be.
I'm pretty sure there's an SOA one, too. But I'm not 100% sure on that.
But either way, Mr. Suit is on the Destroyer Boy LP, and it's a great cover. But it's definitely it's I'm trying to think of a way to frame it. Like it's just really interesting. It's a really different take, much like 12XU actually. It's sort of a bizarre, more aggressive, certainly more distorted take on it. But anyway, just as a choice, when you think of how the rest of that record sounds and the overall sort of vibe of New Bomb Turks, I just thought that's a very strange choice of like song and or group to choose.
Well, they always did like, you know, and then they would do more obscure kind of Kill by Death songs and some other records. So they would always do, I don't know, something in kind of like take up the aggression level.
Yeah. I can't argue it. I just think in hindsight, it seems more bizarre than perhaps it did at the time.
Yeah, they're, I don't know. They're like, that's what I've always thought of this band as being kind of like, you know, like they're not a garage rock band.
Yes, which is which I believe is what people tend to associate them with more.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think it's because they were so musically literate, you know, and they were just so kind of like into, you know, music and stuff that they kind of, you know, like came off, I guess, like, I don't know. I don't know why they got lumped in that scene, actually.
Well, nowadays I would say, well, if you look at the kind of the book he wrote, which is excellent, which we can talk about, but I would see that now. But yeah, at the time, I don't know. Maybe it was just who they were playing with predominantly. I don't know. But yeah. Anyway, I definitely think they were more aggressive than your atypical garage rock band. Certainly aired more on the punk end. But I think though. Perhaps it was also their, maybe not like super intentionally, but they seem to have like a bit of a distance that they would, and the book kind of, you know, makes little comments that suggest that they, or he specifically, was not interested in being associated with specific elements of what was going on in punk, which he kind of alludes to in the interview too.
Yeah, and then once again, I think that goes back to what we were saying. Like, it was a very weird time for both punk and hardcore, you know, like whatever you defined it as. Yeah. Like, it was exploding on the mainstream, and there was also, like, you know, this thing that had kind of a great distance, certainly sonically, from what had happened before that was kind of happening in hardcore at the same time. So, yeah, I guess, like, you kind of just go where you fit.
And I think that's another thing too, is it's like they're one of these groups that doesn't really like entirely fit. That's I think the more of the, because you know, they don't, I don't remember any, like, and you may recall this, but around the time of the release of this LP specifically, the first one, I don't know what the sort of the MRR opinion of this group was. I assume it was good based on it being Crip, but I don't know.
I don't know, actually, to be honest with you. They never seemed like I imagine Timmy O'Hanlon would have been a fan.
You would think.
But I don't know, actually, to be honest with you. I don't remember them getting a lot of coverage.
Yeah, again, like I don't really either. I first heard them from I was trying to find the year of it. There was a comp that Crip did of the singles called Pissing Out the Poison. So that was 95. That was the first thing I heard. But even that, I can't remember if I bought that because I read a review in MRR of it or something. Because it's strange that I would just buy that off the cuff. But
I imagine they would have gotten well reviewed in MRR. Like, they always seem to have reviewers that knew, they were passionate generally about the records they were talking about. Unless it was something they really fucking hated, then they were deep passionate about it.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah,
certainly some incredible reviews over the years in that. I'm just looking through this comp that's like also shows a bunch of the covers that they did. Like, they did a Radio Birdman cover. They did trying to find some of the other covers, but they definitely did like a bunch of covers.
Modern Lovers, Billy Childish.
Yeah.
There's just a bunch, but It is funny because, again, I heard that off, like, I didn't recognize some of those as covers at the time, certainly, and I haven't revisited this comp in ages, so even looking at it now is kind of a funny moment back in time. I think I would be super psyched on this now. I'm going to go listen to this later.
Yeah.
Or tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh, well, I want to sleep. I want to hear that. And they do a Billy Childish cover. They were kind of like the first band, I guess, to go back and, like, you know, kind of embrace Billy Childish in a big way.
Well, and he speaks a lot about in the book too. And, like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. For me, that's not hard because I think it's, for me, there are no misses in that category. But yeah, I could, you know, it makes sense. Sonically, it makes sense. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it was like kind of, in the book, he kind of details it more. Mm-hmm. That whole interview, although the interview I find extremely amusing and particularly curmudgeon.
Yeah, like if you haven't read that book, you got to read it.
Yeah.
It's one of the great kind of music books, as I kind of alluded to on the show.
I agree.
I got to see them a few times. The times they played in Toronto, I think they played the first Danko Jones show. Like Danko Jones opened for him the very first time Danko Jones played, or might have been the pre-Danko Jones band even that opened that show. And then, of course, they also did, you know, shows with Space Shits, and they did shows with Deadly Snakes really early on. And they played also here with the Helicopters one time. And, yeah, they were so good live.
Well, those lineups are all sound amazing. But yeah, I never got to see them. The photos and stuff look good. I've never really watched footage that I can even think of. I need to check that out now in the YouTube era. But yeah, I don't know. I never, like, what do you know what years you were kind of catching them? Is it like first LP or second LP?
It would have been probably second LP and then 99 kind of era.
Yeah. I really regret not seeing them. Like around 99 for sure, I would have been able to like catch them easily, and I just slept on it. I don't know why.
Well, I think that's like one of those things where, you know, you don't appreciate it necessarily till it's gone.
Yeah, this is true.
With a lot of these bands.
Yeah, I think that's...
Go on.
No, I think they were a little more contemporary than some of the groups I was trying to catch in those years that were like that. Although, ironically, most of them have not stopped. But I remember thinking like, oh, you know, I just thought I'd eventually see them at some point. And then they were the one that didn't last the whole go. I think they had a great run, though, actually.
Yeah, they definitely did. I like the run of
this group. You know, bands can reform and do whatever they want. But I like when groups have sort of a decent run that isn't too short, but is admirable and, you know, gives everyone time to kind of catch up to what they're doing.
Uh-huh, absolutely. And I love when a band, they never really broke up. They just stopped playing for a while.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Which is,
I like that.
And because I think that's the other thing about this band that's really cool is, like, there's no drama. It doesn't, like, obviously there are dramas in every band, but, like, it really feels like at the end of the day, they're still friends.
Yeah, which I hope. I mean, I assume based on the reunion stuff, like we mentioned, I would gather, I hope that's still the case.
Well, it's not always the case with bands, Chris. I can tell you that from
this is true.
Things I've heard, not experienced.
It's wild that they have, when you look at the catalog, that they have three LPs on Epitaph. I don't know why I didn't. I remember all these records, like, to see them, but I don't know why I didn't think they were on Epitaph for that long.
Yeah, it's funny. You don't think of them as being an Epitaph band, but they had, like, a really good, like, 5-year run.
Yeah.
As like an Epitaph band, like I would say that's the majority of their career.
Yeah, I do think they were on it in a bizarre era, though.
Yeah, it, like, definitely Epitaph was going full on into, I don't even know what you call this music, because I guess like at the time it could have been labeled garage rock, but it was just so much more punk. Like Epitaph, once again, like, fuck, if you're going to sign the best bands in this genre, you know, like you kind of did.
Well, I'm trying to think. They had the Humpers and them. And I'm trying. What was the other?
Trying to get to that era right now on the resource.
I'm trying to think of the ones because those
had
were the
Zeke
big
Humpers. They had
Zeke as well. That's right.
But I'm just about there. I know I'm just about there. I can feel it. New Bomb Turks, Scared Straight, CD Sampler, 96. That would have been it. So yeah, Gashuffer 2 was on the label.
Yeah, there's another one. Good call.
Brother Wayne Kramer was on the label.
Yeah.
Red Ants, Ansu kind of get thrown in there as well.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, like a really kind of interesting kind of initiative where they signed all these bands. The Hookers? I totally forgot the Hookers were on.
I don't know. I didn't know that. Okay.
Dude, the Dwarves, the Neckbones.
Yeah. How did I forget? Yeah. That Dwarves record came out in that year for sure. That was like 96, I think.
Yeah. That was a great time for that label. Like going like, you know, like you're, you know, and people at this, you know, I'm sure at the time were like, oh, they're going to kill these bands and destroy these bands. But like for a label like Epitaph to kind of go and be like, all right, what should we sign? And to like turn around and be like, let's just sign like, I don't know, like the best punk bands going.
Yeah. Again, it's a hindsight thing too, right?
Yeah.
The Donnas in 96 too. Oh, no, that's La Donna's, pardon me. I was like, I thought they were a Lookout anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think they went up there.
No, wrong group. I was like, I just thought they threw on a Donna's record in that era too, but.
The Cramps?
What Cramps record did they release? I don't remember that.
Like a Bad Girl Should. But I don't know if they did an LP around that point too with the label. I think they did. I think they definitely had an LP on Epitaph.
I'm just trying to look here. But regardless,
it too. Flame Job, of course, that was on Epitaph in 94. Mm-hmm. And then Big Beat from Badsville in 97.
Those were both on Epitaph?
Yep.
Why didn't I? That's wild.
Flame Job was also on like a major label too. It was on like Creation. Okay. It was on a bunch. Maybe it was just on Creation mainly and Epitaph.
Yeah, because I don't know. I didn't think that was on that, but. Who knows?
It's weird that record came out in Creation and Epitaph. Let that sink in. That's fucking nuts.
It is. It truly is.
Oh, so weird. But like, yeah, like Epitaph, once again, kind of can't fault them for this kind of like signing spree they went on.
No, I agree.
And also, like, doing records for Arl, Burnside, 20 Miles, T-Model Ford, and Junior Kimbrough. Like, I know, like, we kind of joke about epitaphs I'm here, and epifad is, like, a genre.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like, damn, like, to give all those guys, like properly distributed records, and I would imagine, because I haven't heard anything otherwise, but, like, paying them properly, too, like, that was cool. That's another cool, like, kind of signing thing. Like, they could have been signing a bunch of bullshit at the same time. And granted, like, you know, it's all about capitalism and making money, but you know, there's ways to do it where at least you're doing it in an interesting way.
Yeah, I would agree. I think what that was, because I can't remember when that anti-label like came about, but I believe it was after that.
It was after that. That was on Fat Possum. Wasn't that
what? Oh, okay. So, but I thought, isn't Fat Possum a subsidiary of?
Fat Possum is its own thing.
Yeah.
But I think it at some point had something with Epitaph, and they did
a bunch of these records. I do recall some of that, because I remember, again, it being getting promos for all that stuff in those years.
And yeah.
Kind of hearing a lot of that from there. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's when you look at a lot of the stuff they put out, it's even just looking at it now, it's kind of funny how, like, yeah, it's sonically relatively in the same, you know, sort of arena, but there's things that are a little outside.
Yeah, no, they signed some cool stuff during this period, that's for sure.
All right, what do we got here? What was the next thing? Was that your point or mine?
I don't know, dude. It's just like a free-for-all points-wise right now.
Yeah, oh, there was a couple things. One thing was the Curtis Blow was opening for the Clash, he mentioned?
Yeah.
That's incredible. It actually makes complete sense, but it's funny to hear about now. Also, as a weird anecdote, something I saw on social media was via SSD's official account.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned that today is the I guess, was the anniversary of his Joe Strummer's, I think.
Yeah.
And they put up a sort of a little, like, you know, shout out, and it was about how, can't remember what, I guess they went to see The Clash, and then they ran into him, and he was the one who suggested they go see the Bad Brains, which is kind of insane when you think about it that way.
Well, didn't they have, like, some run-in with the Bad Brains, or, like, no, I don't mean that in a negative way, but in New York, right, during that famous kind of stand that they did? Did the Bad Brains open a couple shows?
I don't remember, but the thing, basically the way it read, it seemed like they had gone to a Clash show. I would imagine this is early on. I don't know if this is even SSD being a group yet.
Yeah.
And essentially they said they ran into some English guy with a scarf and that he suggested they go see the Bad Brains. And then that seemed to be, like, you know, obviously the paradigm shift for, like, it was for so many people. But to insert anything to do with the Clash relating to the Bad Brains, I just, something I wouldn't have thought, but it was an interesting little anecdote for sure. Mm-hmm. Back to the taking it, bring it all back home to the Curtis Blow opening and all that stuff. But yeah.
Oh wait, there's a, I guess they exported them in, there's like trivia that someone's like put up. Where did Bad Brains support the Clash? Brixton Academy, Bonds Casino, New York City, Santa Monica Civic Center. I don't know which one it is. Let's find out what people have said. Well, no one on Facebook knows the real answer, apparently.
I'm just going to call up that thing just while we're on it.
Yeah.
Trying to find the... Just because I believe the post read something along the lines of that. I don't believe it was relating to the Bad Brains opening for the Clash, and this had to be, yeah, so it was, well, it doesn't mention if they open or not, but it was
they did open for them during their Broadway, their Bonds kind of run years ago, where they did Bonds for May 28th to June 13th.
Yeah, the Clash at Bonds, you're correct, and then that's what this post mentions. But it also mentions that he said to come see them at A7 later that night.
Oh, weird. I guess they were in New York seeing it.
Yeah. So anyway, random little anecdote while we're on it.
Very cool. Very cool. Once again, social media, you know, it's got a lot of bad problems. It's also got some good problems. Like, you can see cool shit posted on there.
Yeah, you unearth the odd thing like that, and it makes you happy. Yeah.
Yeah, it justifies all the corroding of our social fabric that it does.
Speaking of which, I was trying to, because I have the book on me, that We Never Learn book, which we've mentioned and you mentioned in the interview.
A fantastic book. Yeah, it definitely should be read and by anyone.
It was released by Backbeat Books, and I recommend it. But there is a bit of information in here. I was trying to find the actual page, and I can't remember where it is. But that mentions you. It mentions a member of your group, but it doesn't mention who it is.
Yeah.
Is doing a band, well, it alleges in the pages that is doing a band with a member of Death of Samantha, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't believe ever came to be.
No, and it was also supposed to have someone from the Black Keys in it, too.
Oh, wow.
At one point. Like, it was going to be like a Cleveland worship band. But never came to be. It would be hard to do a band that encapsulated all my love of Cleveland in one place musically.
So for the folks that had read that, but so you're, this was you.
It was me.
Okay.
This is one of the Damien projects that never came to be.
Gotcha.
You know, I'd love to do it still, but yeah,
it was. And who was it? Who was it with that was related to Death?
It was John from Death of Samantha, who also plays in Sweet Apple.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I kind of met him. I guess I met him. First time I met him was in Cleveland. No, maybe the first time I met him was in Austin. But like one of the coolest people, like someone once again that knows a shit ton about music and can kind of like go off and talk. And like, I just love listening to them talk about music and stuff. And yeah, we kind of had this idea to do this Cleveland band, but it's hard to do shit.
Yes. I just thought that was a funny little anecdote we could mention based on, and I wish I knew which page in the book it was. Cause when I first read it, I think I hit you and at least Jonah up and asked like, what, who is this? And then I should have known it was you. That makes the most sense.
Well, yeah, no, it could go on one of two ways. You knew it probably wasn't Mike.
Well, no, it could be a variety of people in your band, but I don't know. Now that I think of it, it makes the most sense it was you. But yeah, you never know.
I know. I wish I had my name in that book, but unfortunately not. Just the nameless member of Fucked Up. anything else you want to
go on? Can we mention that he, and this is, hey, anybody can have their opinion, but I think is this the first person I've ever encountered that likes Cut the Crap by The Clash?
Maybe. Yeah. Definitely maybe. Like, I don't hate it. Like, I really don't hate it as much as, like, I think there are, you know, it's not my lowest point in The Clash history.
Yeah. Based on Damien's rough criteria of The Clash.
Yeah, I've got different criteria that I judge them against.
Yeah.
First album only.
Either way, that was surprising to hear him mention. But at the same time, I loved it. I just thought, wow, you don't hear that every day. But I don't know if I'm with him on that. I don't really like that record.
No, I'm not all in on that. But I, you know, once again, I don't hate it as much as I probably should.
The title is horrible too.
It's a terrible, terrible name.
Yeah. I just thought it was a funny shout out.
And it hasn't gotten cooler as time has gone on, eh?
No, and that's like, I believe, isn't the cover have him with like a weird mohawk on the cover too or something?
Oh yeah, he's got the Joe Strummer hawk.
Yeah.
That's what, when Greg Dick, former guest of the show, was cutting Holden's hair the first time, and Holden's like wanted his hair in the mohawk like that Blue Jay player has, he's like, Greg's like, turns to me, he goes like, Joe Strummer Cut the Crap mohawk, and I'm like, yeah,
that's amazing.
So yeah, that's how you have to communicate sometimes. Greg Dick loves baseball, but he did not know what each of the players' haircuts look like.
Fair enough. What do you got queued up? Anything?
I don't know. I could go any number of places. I think once again, it's fascinating how much cool stuff comes out of Cleveland. You know, the Mice, who have come up on the show before, being a perfect example of it. Like, you know, a band that never gets mentioned. Ever, but yet is so fucking good.
Yeah, that's one I came to later, and I just re-listened to the that Scooter LP, and it's excellent. Like, I didn't remember it being that good.
Yeah,
when I heard it in passing, but it is great.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I don't really know anything about the group, so him kind of mentioning, or you two both talking about it, but him sort of like, you know, whatever, hammering home that point. I find it bizarre when there's a record this good, especially in the era of reissues that are just endless, that this is one. But he kind of mentions that perhaps why, but it just seems insane because that's a great LP. That definitely needs to be more heard.
Oh, yeah. I would love that to get a proper reissue. Maybe drop the price of the original, too, because the original is very expensive.
Yeah.
Trying to get that stuff on any of the original records by that band, are hard to track down, and you know, worth it, because when you hear them, you're like, fuck, this is amazing. It's like, also, like, you know, the state that gave us Guided by Voices, the state that gave us Devo, the state that gave us the Electric Eels and Rock from the Tombs, and you know, and Integrity and Ringworm and like, and the fucking H100s and Confront.
Yes. And Integrity, if you didn't mention that already.
I said Integrity. Don't worry. I did not forget Integ. No, they were when I got to the modern era, they're the first one. I kind of get in there. But, like, you know, and the Inmates and, like, you know, et cetera, like, so many great bands from all those eras that I mentioned, other than just the bands I mentioned, you know. And there's Pagans. I can't believe I forgot the Pagans, too.
Yeah, good point. That one, you got to make sure to put that one in there with an underline.
It's kind of like it was Rust Belt rock before it was punk rock, you know?
Is this a new Damien?
Well, I'm just thinking about, like, you know, the bands that were coming out of Pittsburgh and the bands that were coming out of Hamilton, you know, and like the bands that were coming out of Cleveland, definitely Detroit. You know, it's amazing. Like it was certainly like music of New York, LA, and London, but more than that, it was like the music from these places.
I think I've never heard it put that way, but I think that's an interesting way to put it. I think the Rust Belt definitely has, and when you weigh it in the way you just did, yeah, it's there's certain things that are hard to argue, because I mean, obviously Detroit, or I guess Ann Arbor, but Detroit sort of whatever centric things get mentioned quite obviously. I've never thought, I mean, again, I think you guys discussed in the interview, the Cleveland things I don't think are highlighted as greatly because of reasons he mentions, which is that a lot of those groups didn't tour a lot. It wasn't like a primary industry city or whatever for music. But yeah, there's definitely like all of the things that you've ever sort of talked to me or about or in interviews with people or whatever, it's very good. So yeah, I don't know the years to weigh it up, but it's one of those things again where it's like we were talking about this the other week in relation to like the Quintessence and like Victoria stuff versus like that city being so primary versus like, I don't know, whatever, LA or London or whatever. If you took all of the Rust Belt stuff like individually and weighed it up against a lot of the stuff that's the most acclaimed, you'd probably have a pretty good battle.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think. You know, and also the stuff that is acclaimed from a lot of these places, like, comes from the Rust Belt originally. Like, you know, the Dogs moving to L.A. Or the Cramps or what are they called? Frankenstein, which became the Dead Boys.
But they were from, where were they from? Where did they move? Oh, they moved to New York, is what you're saying? Or
they moved to New York from Cleveland, okay, right? Like, yeah. You know, it starts as Rock from the Tombs.
Yeah.
And moves, you know, like, it's amazing how much of it kind of, like, radiates out of the Rust Belt, like, for lack of a better term, like, this kind of, like, North Midwest scene. Not really Chicago as much, though.
Yeah, but yeah, that's another funny like little thing where that there seems to be like this imaginary line where it's that sort of stops.
Yeah.
Not to say Chicago doesn't have anything, which of course we've highlighted before, but just it's not of this. A lot of the things that we're discussing don't seem to I'm with you there.
It kind of hit Chicago at different times.
Yes, correct. Yep.
But I don't know where you want to go next, Chris, but I'm happy to leave it with Rust Belt Rock. We've come to an epiphany today and coined a new fucking genre. Look out, Eric Davidson. Coming to you soon, Rust Belt Rocker, the guide to Rust Belt Rock and Roll. I'm a writer now. Chris, you're my co-author. Boom. Let's see 6,000 words by tomorrow.
Yeah, sure.
Is there anything else we want to get to tonight?
No, I'm good. I think that's a good way to end it, actually.
Awesome. Well, I want to say to everyone out there, thank you so much for listening. Chris, how do they get in touch with us at Turned Out of Punk Footnotes?
Well, you can reach us at turnedoutofpunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
And you can find me on various forms of social media at Left for Damien. Follow Turned Out of Punk at Turned Out of Punk. On Instagram and things like that. There's also a Facebook page. If you want to follow Chris, you don't, except if you want to do it in person at those Ancient Shape shows coming up. and follow him with vegan food. He likes that. And also next week on the show, because it's Sami Zayn, we have a very special guest in a podcast crossover event that I've been hoping to find a way to make happen for years. I've been on their podcast many, many a time. Very good friends of mine, huge inspirations for me to do a podcast in the first place, but of post wrestling and John Pollock and Wei Ting fame. Wei Ting will be on the show next week to help us dissect and review the phenomenal Sami Zayn episode that's coming up. Because Chris, your strong points are punk rock, but you would own the fact that wrestling knowledge is not one of your strong suits.
It is not
modern wrestling knowledge.
No, it is not. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. If it was, if we had a, what do they like to call it? The soccer, that's the proper term for it. If we had a soccer player on, you know, I would have to, we'd have to call in reinforcements.
Sure. Well. I just thought of something on the wrestling talk real quick. There was something. Jim the Anvil Lightheart passed on the over the week.
Actually, there was a lot of deaths recently in wrestling. It was actually a pretty horrendous couple weeks for wrestling fans. Like,
yeah,
there were a lot of people that passed away from all over wrestling, like wrestling in Mexico as well. Like Villanos 3 passed away, and there were some others that passed away. It was a really rough week. You know, wrestling is, it's amazing. Like when you think about that as an art form, just like the toll it takes on all these people. And like, you know, there's not a lot of wrestlers that live to a ripe old age, you know?
This is true.
But so, yeah, sadly, yeah. Once Jim the Anvil Neidhart, did pass away, and, rest in peace to Jim. We'll talk a lot about wrestling next week. I think we're gonna have a fun time. I'm going to have a fun time. You know, we're going to be teaching Wei about the punk side of the wrestling punk connection, and he's going to be teaching us, about the wrestling side. Well, I'm going to be teaching with him because, you know, that's my tag team partner. It's basically going to be like, I'm going to have my cake and get to eat it too next week.
Sure.
You know, we're gonna have a fun time. And that is next week on the show. Anything else, Chris, you want to add?
No, I'm good.
All right, everyone. Go out there and make your own culture. Do your own thing. Don't let the fuckers drag you down. And that's it. Yeah, we'll see you next week. Thank you very much for listening.